In 2017, a bunch of nerds were tasked by a podcasting network to come up with a monthly show. These men promptly came up with the idea for a comic book show where they could educate the masses. Today, they use this show as a platform for helping their fellow nerds in any way they can. If you have a nerdy question, if Google hasn't helped you, and if you have a Facebook account, maybe you can ask the Nerds for Hire.
And your nerds tonight are Trevor Camp.
Hello.
Asa Gray.
Yes.
And I'm the host nerd, Jesse Kimball. And we are going to talk about, in our last bit, yes?
How you just said host nerd?
Yeah.
Are we going to talk about that?
No, we're not going to talk about that. We're going to glaze over it.
There is no escape.
Gloss over it? Gloss over it. That's the word I meant to use.
Firing on all cylinders today, huh?
I really am. I blame you for taking me to Chinese food before coming here.
I was on Stairmaster.
Yeah. You were doing the opposite thing.
You were doing anti-Chinese food?
I'm not getting out of this chair. I live here now.
I'll carry you to your car. I can't take you much further than that.
That's fair.
I'm also not getting out of this chair, but for Chinese reasons.
I'll have to come back for you. I could probably carry both of you at once.
Mm.
I'd say that's pretty safe bet.
Yeah.
I'm currently much more heavy than Asa, though, I feel like. Just based on the food I ate, not on our body sizes.
Oh, you've just loaded up. You're like,
I'm
2% Chinese food at this
point. Yeah, I'm deceptively dense right now.
That's fair.
I'm still confident I could pick both of you up.
without throwing
this,
up.
See, this is why we need we need the video podcast.
So you can see Jesse try to lift Asa and Trevor and take them to their cars.
I'd pay that dollar a month Patreon for that.
I was gonna say Patreon. get us some cameras. It's a dollar and you get the pre-shows.
Yeah, subscribe to the Patreon and we can get cameras and you can see us.
Did Asa manage to bring up wrestling when no one else was talking about it? Pay a dollar, find out.
Oh, spoiler alert, everyone knows the answer to that question.
They may not.
All right, so anyway, we're going to do our final tabletop show. Because the first one, we ended up talking almost exclusively about Magic, even though that episode was supposed to be Magic, D&D, and board games.
With some comic book review in there.
Yeah, something
also,
like that.
Also, just I would like to point out the fallout from that Magic show, still have not bought any cards.
I'm so proud of you.
I walked past them at Walmart last night, and I was like, no. No, Dragon. I will not catch you.
You will not chase you
today. It's like, you never catch him.
You just keep opening packs for days.
They do smell so good.
They do.
Give you a little rush.
I'm telling you, you could play Magic with us for free.
Yes, Pusher.
So anyway, then the next episode we talked entirely about D&D. Then this episode, we're going to talk about board games. And I'm not talking like weak nonsense, like Monopoly. Get that crap out of here.
I mean, would you say Monopoly is weak nonsense? It's just an unfun game.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
In fairness, apparently the entire world has been playing that game incorrectly the entire time.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of rules to make that game like way faster and way less fun.
Yeah, but the only proper way to end a game of Monopoly is 2 a.m. flipping the table going, screw you, little brother. You're adopted. And then storming out of the room.
Whether they're adopted or not.
Doesn't matter.
Just hit them with it.
Yeah.
They'll never know for sure.
Like, I don't think I've ever finished a game of Monopoly that it didn't end up in a board being flipped.
In fairness, like, especially with, like, Trevor and I's siblings, there is literally no chance that they don't have the same birth parents, like me and my little brother, him and his little brother. Mm-hmm. There is a significant amount of family resemblance.
I was an only child, so the only time I ever got to play, like, board games was whenever, like, there was, like, a sleepover or something happening. I never got to the table flip part of Monopoly because if, you know, there's four of us playing, I was always the first one out. So I started playing PlayStation and let them hash that all out.
It's kind of like Mario Party.
And I'm going to Tekken. Oh, Mario Party's a whole other monster. That's Super Mario
Party. That's a friend ender.
Super Mario Party's coming out soon. And part of me really wants to, like, never play it or ever touch it. But if we're going to do the thing with, like, Smash and stuff towards the end of the year, that would be a good one. Because there's no skill involved.
I just don't want to subject my Joy-Cons to Mario Party.
That's fair.
Especially like that thing was an N64 controller destroyer,
mm-hmm.
and it would just and a hand destroyer.
That too.
Oh yeah, the calluses. Like,
yeah, the callus in the middle of
the center of your hand, man.
Mm-hmm. All right, now for you youngins out there that haven't seen one of these controllers, the N64 controller, that's the three-handled one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, like playing Mario Party, there's a lot of games where you have to put the palm of your hand on and spin the joystick. I mean, you could do it with your thumb. But you're going to lose
that's
if you do.
Amateur.
If you don't
amateur
care
hour.
About winning.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's Bush League.
So, yeah, you would do that. It would destroy the palm of your hand on top of destroying the stick and the controller.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like, I had so many N64 controllers with ED, like, by the time I was done with it. You held it up like vertical, the thing just flopped right down.
Oh yeah,
it's not up there.
You just have a big scab in the palm of your hand, and when you're like 12, that's a bad place for a scab. It's a rough time altogether. I don't know how we made it out of adolescence.
Mario, I started using my left hand.
Oh, good move.
And maybe this tells the listeners more about us as people than it does the actual games. Mario Party is one that actually got me in trouble competitively.
How do you play competitive Mario Party?
Because there's winning involved, Trevor.
Yeah, you could be competitive with Mario
Party.
There's
a potential to win.
Is there okay.
And so if that's not your goal, why are you even picking up the sticks?
I guess that's fair.
So I never really considered myself that competitive until I started hanging out with Dalton and I's friend Barry, who we met when we were working at JCPenney's. And he had a game night one night, and it was going to be Mario Party, which we'd done bowling, where me and him were roughly the same level of creeping on the edge of decent.
Mm-hmm,
like,
we
could consistently break 100, which I would consider...
Yeah. Prepare,
for our friends group, that was on the edge of decent.
I mean, I say consistently breaking 100 is around decent at bowling.
So, we...
Is it like real bowling or like Wii bowling?
No,
real bowling. Oh, real bowling? Yeah,
so we would
that's
go
good.
To, we would do these, like, couples bowling nights, and we would go, and it would always end up being, like, me and Barry just getting... a little too competitive, like never really like actually angry at each other, but it's like, yeah, this is fun. We're having fun, aren't we? Yeah. Yeah. This is a great time. Well, so he did Mario Party one night, and the girl that I was with at the time, like legit got kind of mad at me because it was one of those Mario Party bull crap. Just like,
it's hard to talk about Mario Party and not swear, ain't it?
You just happened to land on the thing that now you lost 3 stars, and it turns out that 3 stars is the difference between like first place and third place.
Oh.
And I got like a little actually, you know.
Salty about it?
See, and you're laughing because you understand the feeling. But I want to remind you, you're like, how do you get serious about Mario Party?
Touche.
You know.
Yeah, because no, it is painful. Losing that, like...
And
eventually I learned as a child, which was difficult for me. I was very competitive and I knew it,
mm-hmm.
because I had a little brother. That's
if you have
you
a little brother, you
fast.
Are competitive. That's just a fact.
I was here first.
Yeah. You can't let your little brother win. That's a rule.
Accurate.
Like if you lose, that's just round one and you better bring it round two.
Or it's because the game is stupid.
Yeah, the game is stupid or it's broken or they cheated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the only way. They don't win.
Yeah, no, they don't just beat you.
Yeah,
that's not how that works.
These are the rules of Big Brother.
So yeah, no, I had to learn really, really quickly with Mario Party. Same thing with Mario Kart. Like,
yeah, I still won't play Mario Kart.
I just had to like, all right, if I lose, it's not that big of a deal because it's Mario Kart, and the items make it where that's just gonna happen sometimes.
And that's why I can't do Mario Kart. It's the same thing with like Mario Party. Is it's like the skill has nothing to do with it. Yeah, it skill will get you to first place, but you can't stay there because all you're getting is bananas and coins.
Yep.
And everyone else is getting red shells, green shells. Like, no, this doesn't.
Blue shell, bombs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you got to hang out in third place for as long as you can to that last minute.
But sometimes the other people are so bad that you just have to go to first.
It's true.
They were just placed there.
Yeah. So anyway.
So board games.
Well, board games.
With board games, I was never that competitive as a kid because I was always terrible at them. So when you're terrible at it, it's hard to get like at all competitive. It wasn't until like I got older and I was playing with people who were roughly my skill level at things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it's like, wait, I have the chance of being the best at something. I have to do that then. So like anytime we played Monopoly, I'm out first. Because, spoiler alert, I'm terrible with money as it is. Like, and when it doesn't count...
Like 10-year-old days, it was even worse with money.
Yeah, because when it doesn't count... Oh, yeah, of course. Risk, I'm just dumb.
Oh, Risk.
So, like, my friend, there was a sleepover with, I can't remember which group of friends it was, but we had all, like, we had a game plan. Like, it was structured out. We're going to do, like, LAN party stuff from this time to this time. We're going to be up all night. It's going to, we're going to do some board games. It's going to be awesome. We made the mistake of scheduling Risk, like, second, and that knocked the last two people out of the rest of the night. Because neither person, like, they were too deadlocked, and they would not concede or, like, just move on. So, like, hey, you guys, you want to start Halo? We probably only got, like, 10 minutes left of this game. As they lied.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was so bad at Risk. Oh, I was so, like, hilariously bad at Risk.
Me and Jesse are what you call Risk aficionados, to a degree, would you say?
Yeah, mostly because if you play Jesse and Trevor... at Risk, you're playing Jesse and Trevor Risk.
And the only reason you had to play Jesse and Trevor, because the way we played Risk, we played with other people, Kevin and Garrett, and when you played them,
you played Kevin and Garrett.
So basically you formed the Unholy Alliance and then
to survive.
And then it's just let the best man win.
Yeah.
So because what would end up happening?
I want to play Munchkin with you guys. Because that happens as well, but that betrayal, that sweet, sweet betrayal comes so much sooner.
Well, like Trevor and I we would occasionally backstab the other one, but it didn't happen often. Mm-hmm. It usually only happened when we were pissed about something.
Yeah, it was usually an underlying issue that was brought to the game table.
Like when you go to a couple's house and they clearly just had a fight.
Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the way that Trevor and I used to play Risk, we would always play at Kevin's house because he had the biggest house.
Mm-hmm.
It would end up being
five of us, usually.
At least, yeah, because it would usually be like me, Trevor, Garrett, Kevin, and our other friend Eli. And we would get kind of into it. Like, we would show up with props and whatnot. Like, Trevor and I had hats. Eli would show up with, like, a German Army helmet.
No, it was American World War II Army helmet. I remember. He said it was grandfather's. We had the big Russian hats. And I had a small bust of Vladimir Lenin that I would sit next to my, like, troops in waiting to inspire them. I was also always the Red Army.
No.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I love that you do similar stuff for D&D Night, like, still. That makes me so happy that this has just been a recurring thing.
Oh, yeah. I've always been crazy.
Basically, Garrett's objective in any board game we ever played was to make sure Kevin won.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
So he was his pocket mercy.
Yeah.
He was the slingshot.
And so that was Garrett. Like, he would go full kamikaze if it meant Kevin won.
This is William C. Riley to Kevin's Will Ferrell.
Mm-hmm.
So we had
John C. Riley.
John C. Riley. I tried.
So we would have me and Trevor would have to team up out of necessity. And
fair.
Survive.
Yeah. And that's the only way we could ever like win. And basically what we would end up doing is make the deal like, all right, I'm gonna do this and we claim victory together, or all right, I think you have the better chance of winning. I don't want to play this for the next 3 hours. So I'm going to wipe him out and you take over. All right. And that was just kind of happened. And then Eli was always the wild card.
That's true.
You never knew what Eli was going to do. Really, it just depended on how the dice fell, whether or not Eli was going to dominate the board.
It's true. Sometimes we'd be so busy fighting the two major powers, he'd sneak in and just take it.
Yeah.
It's impressive.
Like I said, wild card every time.
We played a lot of Risk.
We did, especially like the summer, like from senior year in high school to freshman year in college, like that summer.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of board games, movie nights, because that was also the era that me and Trevor, like our little brothers, both worked at Warenberg.
No. Oh, that was
awesome.
Our other friends got really sick of going to the movies.
Because they had to pay?
They had to pay. Yeah, we didn't. We got a free movie, popcorn, and soda.
Dude, we went a lot.
I mean, yeah.
We saw so many movies.
Meanwhile, your friends were like going bankrupt.
Kevin was fine.
Yeah.
Fair. Powers that be.
Yeah, the powers that be. But anyway, so we had board games going back. So at Risk, after playing so many other board games now, I do not consider Risk a good board game.
No. I can't go back and play it.
No, it's like, it takes forever. It's kind of dull. There's a whole lot of luck involved. And it's just, it can quickly become not fun for a lot of people.
Yep.
Yeah.
So yeah,
similar to Monopoly or like every old board game before like 2000.
Yeah. And a lot of,
and there are some that are like that I still think, like, granted I haven't played them in forever, but like I remember thinking Sorry was fun.
Sorry,
like,
was fun.
Because like those were, but those were like the more simplistic traditional ones. Like it's when you get to the that like PS, like the PlayStation 1 era equivalent of board games, where it's like, okay, yeah, we're in 3D. Look how great everything is. But now when we're at PS4, and you go back and you're like, ooh, that was a rough transition.
Yeah, because there were a lot of like really fun like kids board games. Mm-hmm. Like I remember when I was a little kid playing a lot of really fun ones like Don't Break the Ice or
Trouble,
Ants in My Pants, Hi Ho Cheerio,
Chutes and Ladders, the classic.
Yeah, Chutes and Ladders, the old school. And then you got like
Mousetrap,
the much
Mousetrap. Just kidding. No one ever played Mousetrap. You just set up the Rube Goldberg machine and let it go.
That's true.
Or your parents wouldn't buy it for you because it was like $60.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no, that was always at a friend's house.
That was at summer.
Yeah,
camp.
That was at the
summer
rich friend's
had
house.
A lot of board games.
So yeah, I mean, then you have the other like really classics, like your checkers, your chess, your backgammon, etc., etc., etc.
Chinese checkers.
I know Chinese checkers and I know checkers, but I never learned how to play chess.
I played, chess was probably the board game I played the most as a kid.
One of my friends tried multiple times when I was drunk to teach me how to play chess, and that's the worst time to learn.
Yeah.
Just okay, so this piece can move this way, like, and I'm like, nope. I'm out. I'm falling asleep.
That one's called the pawn. No, that's the rook. Son of a.
Chess is one of those weird board games that like gets exponentially more in depth and complicated the more you learn about it.
Yeah,
it's weird like that.
It's kind of fascinating, but yeah, it's a thing that I have no patience to learn because I like Jesse and I kind of bonded over the same character trait of I will try anything, but if I'm not at least initially like. Okay at it, or can see myself getting decent at it, I get frustrated and I want nothing to do with it.
Ah.
Yeah, I'm pretty bad about that.
It's kind of like how I turned in Overwatch.
But, yeah, so going back here, if that's your only idea of what a board game is or the stuff that we've listed, then we have good news for you.
Boy, do we.
Because there are so many amazing board games out there. Like Asa talks about the PS4 era. Like if you're comparing PS4 to PS1, that really is just about like comparing board games of today to board games of even 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's nuts how many other board games there are out there now.
And they're fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Legit fun. I was not a board game person until I married a board game person.
Yeah. And then like I played a few board games, but then my roommate is a huge board game person.
Oh, boy.
I wish we did more board game stuff.
That's what D&D night was originally, was board game night. Mm-hmm. And then we tried D&D once, and we never went back.
Yep. Oh, no, yeah. Like, I'm very aware.
We still do board game night from time to time.
Usually that's on Saturday nights.
Because I always kind of, like, I was never a board game person because, again, only child, and I just pretty much did what my friends wanted to do.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The board game was balling a cup.
Most of the time, like, board games were not on the list, like, at all. So it wasn't until Will Wheaton had his YouTube series Tabletop that I would start and watch those. And I was like, that looks amazing. I want to play that. And then eventually I got somewhere where like I had friends that would actually be willing to play. Like I was dating someone who also was like super into it. And then we had friends that would come over and we did board game nights pretty regularly. And that's where we got into like Ticket to Ride and Carcassonne, stuff like that.
Huh.
Yep.
But mostly it was that Will Wheaton Tabletop series, which was so good. And it's like, I would love to be able to do something like that, but looking at the amount of work that would take and how, like, okay, you have to explain the rules. That's the least fun, least interesting part of any board game.
That is true.
Ever.
Absolutely.
Like, Geek and Sundry has stuff where it's like, hey, learn to play this. And one of them was like a Batman-themed one, so I started watching it, and then it's like, okay, and now you get into the, because some of them do like,
those videos are like 2 hours long, so
they're like 2 hours long, but the first like 30 minutes is going over the rules and the different phases, because it's real easy. Like there are some games that hit that sweet spot of sort of complicated, but it's real easy to pick up, and then but it's real easy to cross immediately over into just unnecessarily unforgivingly difficult.
Like, one of those games that I think really does hit the sweet spot that we just tried recently, Andrew bought, it's called,
Pandemic.
No, that one sucks. Okay, I say it sucks. Pandemic is really fun, but when we actually started playing by the rules, it's really
hard.
Really hard.
Wait, is it that card
Russian
game
roulette?
Thing?
Don't play Russian roulette.
Jesse, you guys are doing the wrong stuff. That's not a board game. You got to get out of there.
I mean, so far, I am undefeated.
You need a new roommate?
Not yet. He's also undefeated. No, Russian. Okay, so there is actually a Russian roulette. So there is actually a Russian roulette board game. It's more like a card style game. Basically, it's more about like bluffing and calling bluffs.
Okay, I'm in.
It's fun.
I'm so bad. Like, you guys played that one game with the Jackbox game.
Yeah.
No, Jack in the Box.
No, the
or Jackbox TV.
It's the, yeah, Jackbox TV thing. Like, yeah. I do not have a poker face.
Do you not enjoy? Do you not like embrace the joy of lying to a dear friend straight to their face?
I love lying to my. I love lying to my friends. I'm just bad at it.
Oh, okay.
Especially because then I have too much fun and I'm just like,
you're just like,
no, it's definitely not me. Like my voice changes. I'm
starts cracking and stuff.
In a game of werewolf, I think it was. Or no, it wasn't werewolf. What was the? There was one of those kind of games where you do like have to like bluff. You get a character card. And you have to lie about what character you are.
Yeah, it's kind of like Mafia.
Roles.
It's all based off the old Mafia style.
Yeah, it's a real similar style game to that.
Yeah.
Apparently, I lied so well in that one that now no one trusts me in any board game we play.
I've known you since high school. I don't trust you in any board game already.
That's because you know me.
I do.
These people met me for the first time, apparently. No, like, I just have a poker face. Like, that's just something I'm good at doing. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I just pulled it off so effectively that now any time that there's even the possible just...
It's Jesse.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if someone is lying and I am even a reasonable suspect...
You're not even playing the game, but it's Jesse.
It's Jesse, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that has happened to me in so many games, including that stupid Jackbox TV. I don't play that game anymore because it's not fun. They guess me whether I'm the person or not. And then when I am the person... yeah, no, it's a super, super fun time. But anyway, no, the Russian roulette game, though, is kind of similar. It involves a whole lot of bluffing, but there is significant punishments for calling somebody out if they weren't bluffing. It's really, really fun, and it's a quick, like...
Wait, that's a little card game where you get individual, like, people, right?
Also a bluffing game, but not the same one.
Your roommate has so many games.
He does.
That
he orders
bluffing.
I also have, like, a giant box of board games that I need to just bring over and let...
Yes.
You should.
I need to mark them as mine, so Andrew doesn't try to steal them away, but...
Because there have been a lot of games that have been left at our place that have just been absorbed into his collection.
Or, like, that stupid TMNT... board game that I spent way too much money on Kickstarter.
Oh yeah,
for.
We still haven't played it. I want to play that. At
it's
some
like
point.
That Ghostbusters game that Shannon has.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the Firefly game I have. Nobody's ever played it.
It takes like 8 hours.
Except
to play.
For me, by myself. You can apparently do a round by yourself.
He says apparently he did it.
I did it.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it.
So anyway, it's a really fun game that takes like 5 to 6 minutes per round. You can just knock it out and call it good. And, yeah, like, there's a ton of different games like that. Trevor mentions, like, the Mafia-style games that are really fun. Mm-hmm. And they make a bunch of variations on that, like Werewolf. There's even a Batman version that's super fun that I really want to play more of that Asa has.
Yes.
Because what is it called? Like
Almost Got Him.
Almost Got Him. And it's based on a Batman animated TV or animated series episode where you have a bunch of villains sitting around the table swapping stories about how they almost got him.
But
they
in this version,
got the Batman.
One of them, like, so like how Matches Malone was there and he almost got him. This one of the villains that you get is secretly Batman.
The
lights go out and one of them gets
taken out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got it. So basically they take that episode and they kind of adapt it to the rules of like Mafia or Werewolf.
Mm-hmm.
And it's super fun.
That's fun.
Like that whole like style of gameplay, super fun. Great party game. You can also turn it into a pretty spectacular drinking game. Those of you out there that play drinking games are clever enough to figure out how.
Let's be honest, you can turn most board games into a drinking game.
My favorite board game turned into a drinking game is Jenga.
Oh, yeah. Like with the stuff written on individual?
Yeah. Oh, okay. I was like, I don't get it.
You definitely played with us because I think one night, somehow drunkenly, we still had the most epic Jenga tower I had ever seen in my life.
We have steady hands for drunks.
Accurate.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, you got games like that. There's games like one of my favorite games that is a go-to at any party we have because you can play with just about any number of people as long as it's relatively – well, no, it doesn't even matter. You just have – it's two teams. It's always two teams. So as long as you
minimum
have –
minimum of four people.
Minimum four people, you can play this game. Code Names.
Oh, Code Names.
Code Names is ridiculously fun. You basically throw out – like you have a board set with all these cards that have words on them. Then you have two people, the two people kind of leading each team.
Let's call them the Codemasters.
That's the word. I think that's what they are called in the game.
I had no idea. It just seems right.
But, yeah, either way, so you have the Codemasters, the people giving out hints. They take turns trying to get you to guess the words on the board that match the pattern they have in front of them on this little card. Super fun game, super addicting, super easy to get going.
But their clue is only one word.
Yeah, they can only give one word as the clue, and that one word they give a number following is the number of words on the board that are related to that word. Then the team has to try and guess. Have you never played this with us, Asa?
No.
Oh, that's super fun.
Super fun.
It works really well. If you know the what we say, the code master, like really well and like the way they think, you want to be on their team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is why we end up having to rotate. like we literally turn a wheel. So as in like everybody sitting around the table just shifts over one spot.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you're on the blue team, sometimes you're on the red team, sometimes you're giving hints. like and you'll end up giving hints for, you know, twice in a row for both teams.
Yeah.
That's just the way we do it. You guys can do it however you want.
Jesse and Ben on a team, we kinda clean house pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. Because between the three of us, I've lived with them combined many years.
I would say arguably a third of your life.
Yeah. That's about accurate. We just kind of, like, they know my references, they know my inside bits, so I can give hints, and, you know, if it's related, they can think of it.
Oh, yeah. Jesse's Codemaster, me and Ben are on a team. We're gonna win. That's just happening.
Yep, unless I goof up real bad.
It's happened.
It has. Especially once, again, alcohol is involved. Yes, folks, alcohol is really fun when simple board games are involved.
I don't know. Bring out bring out betrayal.
Betrayal and alcohol do not mix particularly great.
Betrayal is super complicated. That is not super alcohol friendly.
No, it is not.
I like overly complicated board games. Is that weird?
No, it's not. Like, it's because betrayal is super fun. I'm just saying, like, betrayal plus alcohol... does not often make for a great time.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. I'm always having a blast.
Yeah, but you ain't necessarily playing Betrayal.
That's fair.
Anyway, yeah, no, Code Words. And it's like a $20 game. Like, I highly recommend picking that one up. It's always a great crowd pleaser. Literally always.
Yeah, and those card games that are, like, easy to transport, they're really great little party games. That one's one you can get a bunch of people involved in really quick with super minimal explanation on rules. You just pick it up and go.
One round and you're pretty much like, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
Like, that's – what does it – yeah, and by one round, I mean, like, after two people have each given out hints, you're like, okay – I now understand the goal of this game.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's super easy to get the hang of. And then, yeah – Trevor mentioned a much more complicated game. So if you really want to, like, sit down with a group of, like, five people and just hammer out an hour-long board game.
Well, I think it's worth noting, too, that now, like, we've kind of evolved to a point where board games are no longer simply you versus everyone else at the table. Because historically, that's kind of the majority of, like, you might
that's
have
how board games
you,
go.
You might have a teammate. Like, it might be in teams.
Yeah.
Like, if you're playing spades or something.
Mm-hmm.
But now there is, like, this new kind of, not necessarily genre, but, you know, you have games that it's everybody's playing cooperatively.
Yeah.
Like Pandemic that we mentioned earlier. Yeah. That is you Love versus them. The game. You and your whoever else is playing versus the game.
Trying it's to players. Stop an outbreak of a virus.
Right. Yeah.
Several viruses.
And so I think that's worth noting because in the game you're about to talk about, it switches.
Yeah.
What kind of game it is?
In a real fun way.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of those games, like, if you kind of, like, if you have any interest in D&D, but you don't want to take that dive, Betrayal's kind of an interesting, like, jumping off point.
Which, it's Betrayal at the House on Haunted Hill.
Yeah, Betrayal at the House on Haunted Hill, and they also have Betrayal in Baldur's Gate.
It's like D&D's Diet Right.
Yeah, like, it's not, I don't take soda. This as, like, it's gonna you're gonna have a D&D experience. That's D&D in that, like, you have a character
it's
that you play.
It's a role-playing game.
And you play a role, and there's dice to throw.
Also, which, with the amount of role-play is entirely
up to you.
Up to you. Like, yeah. Whenever we played, there was no role-playing.
Yeah, I don't
it
think
was
we...
just that we were just the characters.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only role you really played was when the betrayal happens, and I'll get to that in a second.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, yeah, you're in this house. You and up to four other friends each have characters with specific stats and abilities, and you explore this creepy house.
Mm-hmm.
You find, like, creepy things happen to you with creepy items and a bunch of just creepiness. Super fun. You have to, you know, roll dice and stuff like that. It's based on a lot of your stats.
And your goal is to explore as much of the house as possible.
Yep. Before you trigger the betrayal.
The haunt.
The haunt, yeah, sorry. You trigger the haunt, which honestly isn't always a betrayal scene.
Mm-hmm.
It just most of the time is.
Yep.
Yeah.
So basically what ends up happening with the haunt, there's particular tiles you'll flip, and every time one of those kinds of tiles is flipped, something bad happens to that player generally, and they roll the dice. If they don't reach a certain number with all the dice they rolled, then the haunt begins.
Mm-hmm.
And that number increases each time that they have to beat.
That makes it harder and harder to beat it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the haunt is inevitable.
Yeah, yeah, the haunt will come.
And specifically, there's a different haunt depending on when you trigger that, what room you trigger that yep. with, and what item you trigger that with.
The mm-hmm. game actually comes with two books, one for the person that triggered the haunt, and one for the rest of the group.
Because once you have triggered the haunt, the player who triggered the haunt is no longer playing to explore the house. The person who triggered the haunt is now that it's the group versus that player.
Yeah. Most, and of, most of the time.
Yeah.
Because there are also times with, yeah, so the haunt is based on what room and what item was in the room. And that's how you determine the haunt.
And there's a bunch of different combinations.
And there's so like many different combinations. Like 100 different like endings to the game you can do. Something insane.
With the
like
expansion,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it's silly. But anyway, you have that set up, and that person, or then you have the betrayer. The betrayer is listed in the book most of the time, like in 95% of the cases, the betrayer is the person that started the haunt.
I'm trying to think like an example, like last time I played, like I turned into a werewolf and like had to hunt everybody else down. And
yeah.
like if there was other stuff involved, I could turn them into werewolves or I could kill them, stuff like that.
And there was one where I became the captain of a ghost ship and I was trying to, quote, recruit my friends to join my ghost ship.
Because it's all very lore-inducing. So, like, usually, like, the player who turns into the, like, that triggers the haunt, if they are a betrayer, it's like, oh, you are not actually the old priest from town. You're actually this ghost pirate captain who's trying to recruit people for your crew, or...
Or you become that, like, you are, yeah, you become in what is the word I'm thinking of? Possessed by that spirit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or like yeah, that spirit takes over your body or something. Yeah, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like there's a bunch of different outcomes for what.
But it's
can
all
happen.
Like kind of like horror themed, which yes. is super cool.
Wonderfully horror themed.
And depending on who wins, like you have different like story based on that.
Right.
Like if the betrayer wins or if the people win. But yeah, basically it then becomes one versus all, which is. Super fun.
Oh, it's a great time.
Asa's first time was not so fun for Asa.
Let's correct that too, because it's Asa's first and only time he's played the game. Because it's the only time that I've been around when you guys played it.
Yeah.
Jesse, who apparently has only ever been the betrayer.
That's not true.
That's not true.
You made it seem like you hit on like
he's
every
done it
time.
A lot. He's done
I,
it a lot.
The
Don't
majority
get it wrong.
Of the times
a disproportionate amount.
It's actually usually just me and Jesse who are the betrayers.
Yeah, I cannot think of somebody else that's been a betrayer than me or Trevor. And that's not like, it's not something you can achieve.
Right, yeah. That's like, not the goal.
Just, yeah, the goal is not to be the betrayer. It just kind of happens.
Because usually whenever, depending on which thing the betrayer or the haunting triggers, that triggers different win conditions for both sides.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the players just have to escape the house. Sometimes they have to actually defeat the whatever the threat is. So if you have a lot of the house explored, it gives you better options for mobility. You know where you can go, where you can't go, things like that. So it is very important to try to explore as much as you can in the pregame before the haunt happens. But so we got a pretty sizable amount explored. Me and Jesse are in adjacent rooms. Jesse triggers the haunt. He becomes he unleashes like this Lovecraftian horror.
It was the plant monster.
Yeah, I don't remember if you were consumed by or...
Yeah, I was...
But you took control of it, and literally his first turn as the monster kills me. Just kills me dead. Not, you know, takes me down, and so I really got to struggle my next couple turns. There were no next turns. Jesse had his turn, and then Ace was no longer playing the game.
Yep, just shut down hard.
I won that game.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. See, my favorite is the running bit is that Jesse's roommate Andrew has never he wants to be the betrayer so bad, but he's never been able to do it.
He was so mad. He was so mad when you got it too.
And my favorite event, I forget how it went, was like he triggered the haunt and he was so excited and he flipped open the book to the right page and everything to like see the rules of this particular haunt, and it was like the only time that the person who didn't trigger it is not the betrayer. It was like, Father so-and-so is the betrayer, and I was Father so-and-so. He was just so angry.
And it turns out you lured them to the house for a specific thing. And
yep, and it was the one time that Andrew's triggered the haunt in all the times we played.
And it didn't.
And we played a lot.
And he wasn't the betrayer. Yeah, I think, like, I have played this game a grand total of 6 times. I have triggered the haunt in 4 of those times, and I have won 3 of them. The haunt, like, there are some that are a little bit disproportionate.
It tends to favor the
betrayer.
Depending on, because as you're exploring, you're also gaining, like, items and weapons and things like that.
Boosting stats.
So, yeah, so you have the ability of gaining stronger so that you could eventually fight this threat. But those items are pretty much constantly outweighed with, like, traps and things that will hurt you and hinder you through the rest. And Lord help you if, you know, oh, it turns out Father McGillicuddy is now a serial killer possessed by a demon. Oh, well, he just picked up a sword.
And a bunch of other crazy
items. Right, and a bunch
of
crazy, like, weapons and items. And it's like, oh, well.
Plus, you get new stats whenever, most of the time anyway, whenever you trigger the haunt, you'll end up with new stats.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whenever I became the ghostly sea captain, my movement was dropped almost to nothing, but if I caught you, you were very screwed. And I remember my objective in that one was to drown the house, and anybody that I drowned, or I was flooding the house, and any person that I drowned joined my army.
Mm-hmm.
That one was probably the most fun for me.
For me.
I mean, like, in fairness, I ended up winning, which meant that everybody won, because they all joined my ghostly crew, and we took over the world.
Yay.
Happy ending. Yeah, and then there was the one, though, with Aces, where, yeah, it was some, like, Lovecraftian horror plant monster thing,
mm-hmm.
where I just started, like, sprouting.
It had 2 heads, and it would just grow through the rooms, and...
Yeah.
I remember this one.
Yeah, and then basically I was right next to Aces, so he got it. And fed the plants,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then the plants kept growing, and that one was fun.
That's why you roll solo in Betrayal, man. Don't get too close to other people.
I wasn't trying to.
Yeah, it just kind of happened that way. I think we were both going for a stat boost room.
We were going for some sort of safety. There was something safe nearby, that because, like, I had just gotten, like, I had fallen down a thing, so I had to climb up something. I was like, okay, well, this room is...
Yep. And then, importantly, so the way this game kind of, like, falls out, the person that is the betrayer... that gets the other book actually goes to another room and reads their stats and all of their information and what is public to the other players and what is private to you. And it's the same thing with, like, the other people. Like, their book tells them, like, these are your objectives. This is what's, you know, going to be public to the betrayer, and this is what's not.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, basically the first team or the first, I guess, person to complete their objective gets the win condition, and they get to say their fun little story.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you and your ghostly crew sail the world, and
right.
you drown the world, and it is yours. Yeah, that one was just really fun to me. Anyway. Yeah.
Betrayal is kind of the example of, like, one of those much more complicated games, but because it is so complicated and there's so many different variations you can play in the one game, it's got a ton of replayability.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And especially because whenever we're talking about exploring the house, there's not, like, a house already set up or everything.
No, yeah. It's up to, like, rolling dice and figuring out what room leads into what.
Because,
you have a movement speed, and you move into the next room. And at that point, like, you flip over a tile, or you get a tile for that floor.
Mm-hmm.
You can go upstairs, you can start getting tiles for that floor, and as you explore, you start throwing down tiles. Different tiles have different effects, like picking up items, or, you know, the haunt triggering one. Or there's other ones that are challenges, where if you roll correctly, you get stat bonuses or items. If you roll poorly, you take punishment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's super fun. And, yeah, no, it's not, like, Risk or Monopoly long. Expect to spend about, like, an hour or so on this game.
45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah, I'd say it's about right. 45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah, so it's a really, really fun game to get with a group of friends. And if you want to just do one of those, like, if you want to play Risk or Monopoly, but, you know, a good game, then Betrayal on the House on Haunted Hill, I think is what it's called.
Yeah.
Is going to be your pick.
And I'm going to counter that with it's way less complicated, and it is probably my favorite board game. Ticket to Ride
is not bad.
It's super easy to pick up. It's super easy to understand. It doesn't take too terribly. That's probably like another 30, 45 minute game. I have the European expansion. Basically, there is a map of whichever version that you buy. Like, so there's like a North America one, a USA one, European one,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and you have all of these cities nearby, and a lot of them are connected via train tracks.
Yeah.
And I can't remember if they're color-coded.
They're color-coded.
Yeah, they're color-coded. Okay, yeah, so it's like, okay, so from
they're totally
from
color-coded.
St. Louis to Chicago, there are, it's three white trains.
Mm-hmm.
You draw cards that are different colored trains, and each player has a color, which their color is only for keeping track of who has traveled to where. Once you have three train cards, you turn those in, and then you put three of your tokens down on the map to show that you've actually made it there. And pretty much it's whoever runs out of those train tokens first, that's when the game ends.
Mm-hmm.
And then you, at the beginning of the game, because I'm going way out of order, because it's been so long since I've played it, I'm having to...
Explaining rules via a podcast, like, on memory, a game you haven't played in a while is probably a little difficult.
At the beginning, you also have you have goal cards, so you need to get from Los Angeles to Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And then you also get bonuses for who has the longest uninterrupted train. You get various points worth of... Okay, I have this many goals.
Mm-hmm.
Each of those goals is worth points, but if the game ends and you haven't completed those goals, you're deducted those points. You can always redraw your goal cards, because if you're like, okay, I have to get from New York to Atlanta, but a solid portion of that is taken by another player,
mm-hmm.
I know that's, I can't do that. I'll just lose those points. I have to turn in that card and then try for more. It's super quick. It's super easy to pick up.
Yeah, I played it once, and like I picked it up like pretty quick within like the first, like I played it once and I unintentionally dominated. Like,
oh, no.
I was playing with my wife and Andrew and I forget who else, and I just
ran
wrecked,
train
just wrecked. Like it was
train is right there.
I
take
know,
it to
I'm,
ride.
I'm not swinging for the underhanded pitches, man. Better than that. But
you're on the wrong show. You're on the wrong podcast network.
I'm not Dalton, dang it. But no, I remember like it was super simple to pick up, and if I can pick it up and win in the first round, it's easy. You guys can do it at home. Tick off your friends and family. It's easy.
Every time that I've seen Ticket to Ride played, that's probably played at every board game night we have.
Mm-hmm.
It is always being played when I walk in the door because I've either had to work or I've been out somewhere doing something or what have you.
The game has started before you were able to...
Exactly. So then I wait and then we end up playing like Codenames or something, which is fun. But like I would like to play Ticket to Ride at some point because it looks kind of fun.
It is. Between that and Carcassonne. Those are probably my two favorite.
I haven't played that one either. I've always heard it's really good, but
that one is that's one that I can't go through the rules because it's been so long. But basically, it is you're on like a French countryside.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tile based game. You start with a lake, and then you draw tiles, and you have to place them around. And as you place them, you have certain you're trying to build it in a certain way. Like you can build castles. So whenever you're building these castle walls that have to connect, the tiles have to piece together in certain ways. Like you can't put a road into a river. So it's it's a little bit puzzly, but not really. And then you have these little markers. So like the biggest stretch of farmland, you get points. The biggest road gets points. The biggest castle gets points. It's a lot of fun.
Sounds like Catan with extra steps.
No.
A little bit.
Not really.
And I already don't like Catan.
Oh, I like Catan.
The one time I played it, I was told a rule like midway through that if I had known, I would have done way better.
That you could like trade.
That
in
you can
for,
trade.
Like,
yeah, you can trade. Yeah, because I was sitting on a bunch of stuff that I had no use for.
Yeah,
yeah. We didn't know about that rule until because the rule for those out there wondering, Catan, another fun board game. It's an older one, but it's still good.
I don't like it. But that's mostly because I always lose.
That's fair. I win a lot. So I
you,
just love it.
All luck. And you win pretty decisively too.
Yeah. I mean there's strategy to it, but it is definitely a lot of luck involved because it's at the end of the day it's dice rolling. Mm-hmm. Like you can play the odds and be in the best spot possible, but yeah, it's a lot of dice. A
lot of dice.
But anyway, the rule is you can trade four of any resource for one of any other.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't know about that until like six games in.
Makes the games go a lot quicker.
It does. one other thing I want to go back to. We mentioned Pandemic briefly.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to play a game where it's not like you versus other people, like you want to play a co-op game, they make co-op board games. Like Asa said earlier, there's a ton of them. It's a whole genre now.
What's that other one your roommate has?
Forbidden Desert.
Forbidden Desert.
Does he have Island too?
I have
Forbidden Island.
He has both of them. And basically the idea of these games is to complete a set of objectives
mm-hmm.
before the game beats you. And like in Pandemic, for example, it's as you go, and I think you roll dice in all three of those games, right? Or is it just card draw?
I think
it's just card draw.
I think you just draw, in Forbidden Island, you just draw cards.
Yeah, it is in Pandemic as well. Cause I personally don't like these games.
Because Jesse has to beat people.
Not necessarily that. It's just, it seems, I don't know. It's irrelevant.
I understand. You have to assert your dominance over your friends in a board game.
Well, I think like the last two times that I played them, we ended up just getting really, really unlucky and the game ended up trouncing us.
Mm.
So that's why I don't have a whole lot of fun with it.
Yeah, I've never beaten Forbidden Island.
A lot of people haven't.
Or Desert.
I have.
It's Forbidden Island and Forbidden Desert. If you've won this game, you probably weren't playing by the rules.
Or you probably were playing on the easiest mode, because there are modes.
That's true, and I don't mean to diminish Ace's victory. He probably did win legit reading the rules and everything.
Yes.
But the only time we've ever come close to winning this game, we did win when we were cheating. We just didn't know we were cheating. And then ever since we've played by the actual rules, the game is significantly harder. But the point is, like, say for Pandemic, that's the one I played most recently. So I'm going to talk about how that one plays. The idea is to cure these diseases before they become a global pandemic. There are a ton of lose conditions and a couple of win conditions. If you run out of disease tiles to put on the board, you lose. An entire continent gets that disease on it, then you lose. And you can clear out, like, you get a character, different characters have different abilities and stuff, like special abilities and stuff like that, that are helpful for completing the game. And yeah, the idea is just to cure the world of the various diseases that are, you know, breaking out. It is fun. It's just like I said, the last few times we played, I got really frustrated because just the way the cards fell.
You gotta coordinate.
This is
really
a
well.
It is a yeah. difficult game. You are not it meant. Is, you are not meant to win. Like it. This isn't like a oh hey this is a great time. It is a challenge.
Yeah.
And
yes.
it's meant to be a challenge.
Absolutely. So if you're looking for a cooperative board game challenge, pick up Pandemic or.
And if you really love the game, they actually make seasonal versions now. Where they basically are ongoing, where you're actually like writing in notebooks and keeping track, and eventually like, okay, you've played through this number of times, all of the things that came with it are now used, so you have to like buy it again.
Yikes!
Yeah.
Wow, that's a that's good a way next, to stay relevant.
That's yeah. That's some next level insanity.
Yeah, I'm good. I got other stuff to do.
two other games. I think they might have even been on the same because most of the games that I've played came straight from tabletop. Because they just because like I loved watching those like because he brings in like celebrity guests and stuff to play.
You know, is that still on Amazon Prime?
It's on YouTube. Well, I mean, it was on YouTube. It was a Geek and Sundry's channel.
Oh, it was on Amazon Prime for a while because that's how I discovered it was on Amazon Prime.
Have been like newer episodes like with higher production values maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. As far as I know, I'll pull it up real quick. But the two that I really like, one of them is called Zombie Dice. You basically, it's a really simple dice game.
Mm-hmm.
You get a number of, you roll a set number of dice, and you're trying to collect as many brains as possible. But each dice has a brain, a damaged shotgun blast, and like something else. If you get too many shotgun blasts, you lose all, because it's kind of a gambling game too, because like, okay, I've rolled 4 brains, so I have to pull those dice away. And now, okay, I can either roll the next 3 dice, or I can keep my 4 because I've already done really well and just pass my turn.
Mm-hmm.
Or I can go for it, but if I go for it and I lose, then I lose everything that turn.
Mm.
And it's the first person to get to the whatever score is.
Yeah, I have actually heard about this game. It's like if you want to play Yahtzee, but you want to have fun, try this out.
The other one's called Suro. It's T-S-U-R-O. You control a dragon, and it's a board game where everything starts at the edge, and you have these tiles that have lines. It usually has like 2 lines, and they go different shapes. Like some of them go straight, some of them turn left, some of them turn right. And you set your tile at the edge, and then you have this little marker, and you follow the line. And the way to win the game is to be the last person still on the board. So the other players are setting a tile every turn, trying to stay on the board.
Uh-huh.
But if my tile connects to, if I lay a tile and it connects to a board that, or a tile that you've already put down,
yeah.
I then have to follow that tile all the way until it ends. Either it just ends somewhere else on the board, or if you go off the board, you're out.
Ew.
Or if you run into a thing where, like, if you run into another player,
so
you're
it's
out.
It's kind of like Snake.
It's kind of like Advanced Snake, but board game form. I love it. That one's super quick. That can be done in 10, 15 minutes.
Nice.
It's super easy to pick up because it's literally just follow the line and try to keep yourself from, because you place a tile, then you draw a new one. So if you're already on the edge of the board and you only have like tiles that turn you left, then you're screwed.
Huh.
That sounds neat.
Yeah. That one's a lot of fun. That's one that I would bring probably because, like I said, it goes super quick. It's super easy to pick up.
Yeah, and if you
also
want to look
can
at
be very, very infuriating.
Other like quick kind of card game style games. One of the ones that I've tried recently, or I say recently now, it's been a while since I kickstarted it actually, because it was really fun. Exploding Kittens. No, I didn't kickstart that one.
No, it was Bears versus Babies you kickstarted.
I did, because Bears versus Babies was made by the creators of Exploding Kittens, and we bought Exploding Kittens at ICC? ICU or ICC, yeah. ICU at Indiana Comic Con because Indianapolis is apparently like the that's the board game mecca. They have Gen Con there every year.
I want to go to Gen Con.
Yeah, no,
one year.
It looks like it'll be super fun.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely would love to go to Gen Con at some point. But anyway, a huge board game convention.
Well,
huge. And yeah, like a little bit of that bleeds into any other convention that happens there, including Indiana Comic Con. And, there were the guys there selling, I think it was like the oatmeal guys there the first year that were selling, Exploding Kittens. And that game was just dumb amounts of fun. Like, it's super easy.
It is super fun.
Super fun. Super quick to pick up. It's like Uno, but fun.
No, Uno's fun.
It's like Uno with a dark sense of humor.
Yeah,
there you go.
Because Uno's fun. Like when you can just wreck someone's week.
You can do that in Exploding Kittens.
You can absolutely do that in Exploding Kittens as well.
Yeah. I don't know. There's just something about Uno that, like...
You hit them with that draw four.
Just something about destroying a family member in Spanish.
Yep.
Yeah, because like it's definitely faster paced than Uno with different win conditions, because the idea isn't to have a minimum or maximum card size, it's to be the last one standing. Mm-hmm. If you draw an exploding kitten and you don't have something to defuse that kitten, then it blows up on you and you die.
And you're out.
And you're out.
Just like the kitten.
Just like the kitten.
And the game literally takes like maybe 10 minutes for a long round. Mm-hmm. Like it's pretty quick to go through. And then, yeah, like Trevor mentioned, Bears versus Babies is another fun, like, card building game. In that case, you actually like make, you make monsters and characters and stuff like that and fight bosses. Mm-hmm. Like that one's a little bit more complicated to go into on the podcast. So I'm not going to, but the person that ends with the most points wins.
Another really good one. If you like fast paced card games, my favorite card / board game, Monopoly Deal. Which I'm looking based on people's faces here. They've never played. Okay.
No.
We
spent a lot of time talking smack on Monopoly, so.
Yeah. Monopoly Deal is like the inverse of Monopoly. Mm-hmm. It's all the fun of playing a game of Monopoly, but in card form and in about 5 minutes.
I was about to say 5 minutes is the maximum amount of fun you can have playing Monopoly.
Nothing like Monopoly at all.
Yeah, exactly. There's similar words like Boardwalk and Park Place. But essentially your idea is you're like building properties the same way you do on the board, but instead of charging people money for it, it's you just try to be the first to get so many properties, and you can try to steal from other people and all this. And it's when I worked in mental health, I got really into this game. We all the staff played it together. Mm-hmm. And I got my family in on it. I'll bring a deck over sometime, but Flux.
Flux. I have a Star Flux. I think it's like the sci-fi version of it.
I got Firefly Flux, Batman Flux, and Zombie Flux.
I've seen a lot of different versions of Flux. I've never played that game.
Really, it's basically the way it works is the rules, all the rules change.
Would you say they're in flux?
I'm gonna throw your mic. Down your throat and out your butt.
Now I get it.
We do go for the low-hanging fruit here.
Welcome to Podzilla.
Oh, dear. But all the rules change. Like it starts with, like, you draw a card. You draw a card, play a card. The win condition changes. Like, you can be drawing six cards a turn, playing four. Certain cards don't mean this. The rules can get exponentially more complicated.
There are four different types of cards. You know, someone may play like, okay, to win the game, you have to have five types of this card. You draw your fifth one, but it's not your turn yet. And then the person right before you is like, oh, now the win condition is this. Also, you can only have three cards in your hand.
You get real salty real fast.
It has the potential to turn.
It's super fun. I'll bring it over.
Yeah, we'll have to play that sometime. And then Asa briefly mentioned the last board game I want to talk about here because we're kind of running out of time, is a game that I have not played much of, but I want to play more of, Munchkin.
Mm-hmm.
It's the board game version of a dungeon crawler.
Yep.
And basically the goal is to be the first person to the end, right?
Your goal is to get to level 10. I have Munchkin Advanced or Munchkin Plus or whatever it is, but which actually just has the physical board.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like everyone starts at level 1, and you have, and then you're dealt out cards. Those cards have like can either be stat bonuses, items, other monsters, because what you do on your turn is you kick in the door, and then which you draw a card from a pile. If there's a monster, that monster has a level on it. Your level is based on all of your gear, which the gear is all like funny, like hilariously themed, and there's a million different types of Munchkin. Like there's Marvel Munchkin, Batman Munchkin, Space Munchkin. Like it's all of this, and it all kind of can go together.
Yeah.
So you get these items, and it's like, okay, so I just found this level 5 monster. If I beat it, I get two treasure cards, which the treasure cards are traditionally better gear or something that will help you along the way. But I only have a +1 pair of boots and a +1 sword. I need 3 more points to be able to beat the monster. Okay, Jesse's character has 4 points. If you help me, not only do I get the treasure cards, but I move forward, I go up a level. So you could say, okay, I will help you, but I get both treasure cards.
Ooh.
Or, okay, I'll help you this time, but I want half of the treasure. So there's a lot of playing with other players and bargaining.
And then
on the other side of it, so Jesse helps. So, but if I lose, then there's usually like a penalty, which is traditionally you have to discard a card or you go back a level, something like that.
And that usually, if I'm not mistaken, if the few times I've played it, that impacts both people that have decided to fight the monster.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I think that might be a house rule.
Okay. I thought it impacted both people. But.
I think it's supposed to, but Munchkin is one of those games where house rules kind of reign supreme. And I don't remember the way that I played because it's been a very long time since I've played Munchkin.
Yeah.
But on the other end of that, say I kick down a door, I'm level 6, and there's a level 2 guy here. Oh, simple. I'm about to just, okay, hang on. So, like, say Trevor does that.
Okay.
Trevor's like, I'm about to just crush this thing. I got 4 levels on
it. I'm super excited about it.
Oh, actually, I have a card that lets me add 5 points to a monster whenever I want. Or I have a card that lets me also play another monster card. So you can sabotage a player.
We can build and break friendships in this.
Exactly.
I like it.
And it's risk reward because it's like, okay, if I help you, then I can argue and get some of your treasure to help my character, but you go up a level, which puts you closer to level 10.
Mm.
And there can only be one winner. Like,
yeah,
it's
the first person to level 10.
Yeah.
Or I can do like, but also if I help you, you might remember that and help me down the line. Or I could totally like,
I can totally screw you over. Yeah.
If I do that early in the game, then not only are you less likely to help me, but you're more likely that whenever you get one of those cards to like add 10 to any random monster, I'm going to be your target.
Also, from then on, Asa will no longer be trusted at the table. Everyone will realize, like, oh, I'm not going to help Asa because look what he did to this guy that helped him.
But eventually, like, it has to happen.
Never be the first to screw over somebody at the table.
Mm-hmm.
You can be the second, but don't be the first.
Yeah. So Munchkin is, that's another one that can really, you know, I have been, okay, I'm about to win the game. And now all of a sudden, like, the other people who are at, like, no one's close to me. They're all at level 7. I'm at 9. I'm about to go in. Oh, wait. Hit with this, hit with this, hit with this. Lose half your gear. Go back 5 levels.
Whew.
Because you lost those mods. You lost those.
Yeah, one of the times we played Munchkin, I remember. I'm trying to remember who was playing with us. I think it was me, Mandy, Andrew. Were you playing with us?
I don't know if I played with you guys.
I don't think you. It may have been Dalton that I'm thinking of and somebody else. Like, I thought you were there too. But either way, there were 5 of us playing Munchkin. Mandy was playing with us, I know for sure. Mm-hmm. That was Steven. Steven was playing with us. Because I remember Steven was about to win the game. and then, like, earlier in the game, Steven had screwed over Mandy. Mandy had been biding her time.
That sounds very right.
Andrew just wanted the game to be done. So Andrew teamed up with Steven to help him finish the game. But Mandy, like, oh no, absolutely not. Here we go. And Mandy just nuked Steven. Like, she dropped the most ridiculous set of bombs, dropped him from level 9 to level 1.
Oh.
Annihilated him. We were playing with the rule, like, the negative effects whoever agrees to help fight as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. Yeah, so Andrew and Steven both went all the way back down. It was really funny because, like I said, she had been saving that nuke since she had been screwed over.
Oh, yeah. Mandy's not one to cross.
No. She'll get you.
Oh, yeah.
With everything.
Mm-hmm.
It was bad. It was really funny, though, because it was literally she dropped her hand of like 9 cards. Just bam.
She wasn't upgrading her character at all. She was just holding on to every negative thing. Oh, that's amazing.
Oh, so funny. That's something you can do with Munchkin.
Mm-hmm.
And Munchkin is a super fun game. Like, it's not as complicated as we maybe made it sound.
It's a lot of these games are, once you get into them, they're a lot easier.
Yeah.
They're pretty easy to get into. Like, Ticket to Ride, super easy to get into once you're actually like, oh, these are my cards. This is what I have to do. You're looking at the map.
Yep. And even like Betrayal. We talked a whole lot about the rules and everything of the way Betrayal works. Once you play a round of Betrayal, you're like, oh.
Yeah.
And I mean, really, that's going to be most of the games we mentioned tonight.
Mm-hmm.
There are games
Firefly
out there.
The game.
Yeah, because we didn't talk about that one for a reason.
It's because none of you have played.
Well, and the same as like the TMNT game. Like that is okay. You have character movements. You have to reach a certain point, but then there's enemy turns that you have to control and draw cards to figure out where they move, which direction they go.
The Cones of Dunshire.
Exactly.
Oh God.
It's about the Cones, Eldritch, Jesse.
The Eldritch Horror games come
you
to mind.
The essence of the game. There are board games out there that are that complicated. We didn't recommend any of them.
Yeah. Betrayal at House of Haunted Hill is easily the most complicated of the games we talked about tonight. Yeah.
And even that one, like I said, one round and you're good. Mm-hmm. Like you'll quickly understand exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's super, super fun. All of these board games we mentioned are super, super fun, except the co-op ones. Unless that's your speed, then by all means,
those are fun. You just have to go in with the mentality that I'm probably not going to win.
Yeah.
If you're going in thinking, oh, it's a board game, it's going to be easy. Clearly, there has to be a winner. There does, and it's usually the house.
Yeah.
Like it's the gambling, but
yeah, no, because it is fun to play through. There's a lot of communication, a lot of coordination, a lot of teamwork.
And if you can get like a good group of people, like that's amazing.
Oh yeah.
But if you're playing with people who like are less engaged and don't really care, then it can really turn into kind of a slog.
Because, yeah, if you have one player that's just like, eh, I don't really care about this, then, yeah, like it's not going to be fun.
You just
for
go
anybody.
Ahead and make new friends.
Right.
Also, I don't remember if I said it earlier, but Tabletop is entirely on YouTube. It's got like 4 seasons worth on there. Those do a great job of, because Will Wheaton is just a good host. So he does a really good job of like.
Will Wheaton.
He does a really good job of explaining the rules, but he does it in a way where he actually like shows you on the board and like because it's a video format.
Yeah,
so
you can actually, he usually has like a top down camera.
He's
on
got
the board
a top
too.
Down camera. He's got things where people can show what cards they're holding.
He's got a
super
setup.
Cool. Yeah, it's a very professional setup, and it's that thing where it's like, man, he does it like he has all of that. It's like that's why we will never do one unless you go to patreon.com/podzilla1985.
If you want to see us do this board game stuff,
we're trying to get Will Wheaton rich here.
Whenever,
if you want to fund this,
oh man, if we could get Star Trek money from Patreon, please.
We have cameras on everything. I put cameras on my shoes.
When we initially did the first D&D campaign with like you, me, and Shannon and Hunter, like I very much wanted to film that. Because I thought
you had like the best
it's
name.
It's the best name. We're not saying it.
No, because we don't want anybody to steal it.
Because someone will steal it.
But tell me after the show.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Best name for a podcast for this, and I still want to do it. Mm-hmm. Same thing with like our video, like our open box channels.
Yeah.
Like that needs to happen at some point because that name is so good.
Once like it gets to be like wintertime and we can kind of get more into like we have the means to actually do like video editing stuff, I really want to do more with YouTube.
Yeah.
Like, I know it's kind of a dying format, and we're not going to make any money
off
of it.
He said YouTube.
But
I thought he said YouTube, and my heart got a little warm.
Well, I mean, also.
And then it was broken.
They're not mutually exclusive.
No.
Unless there are rules that you can't go onto YouTube, which we'll have to get into after the show as well.
What state are we broadcasting out of?
Oh, it's all of them. Oh, broadcasting out of, it's Missouri. All
right, we're good.
All right, guys. That's going to do it for our show, though. But yeah, definitely, if you want to look up more board game stuff, hit that up. Like the
Geek and Sundry also has like a how to play. They spotlight different board games. They had a Magic the Gathering one.
Yeah.
You can go and watch those. And all of these tend to be a little bit longer form because it is not only explaining the game, but they're playing like a full game of it, which a lot of they do editing to like slow parts or things like that. But.
Right. So, yeah, it's one of those things. Like, guys, board games are fun.
Mm-hmm.
They make better ones than Risk and Monopoly and Uno
and
Yahtzee.
And that said, they're not all, like, super complicated, overly complicated. There are board games you can play, like, like Zane. He could play, like, there are games that he could play with his kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, especially, like, soon, even. Because there are, very kid-friendly ones coming out that are more than just, Parker Brothers and things like that, and it's kind of exploded into this whole like culture, so there are just so many resources that you can go to, like even like Villainous Grounds has board game stuff, like they do stuff you can play there at the shop, which is super cool. There are like usually your local, like if you have a local game shop, odds are they have at least started to look into board games. They may not necessarily have the setup to be able to play them there,
but they probably at very least have like
games
some
for
of the more
sale.
Obscure ones for sale that we mm-hmm. mentioned,
or even like Barnes. Yeah. Anytime I go to the mall, I always go to Barnes and Noble and just look at their board game section.
Barnes and Noble has every game we mentioned.
Yeah.
Tonight, I want to say yeah, every one we mentioned.
They're usually a little pricier than what you'd find them at a game shop or something like that. Yeah. But yeah, they are definitely there.
But even if you just look there, look at the selection, go online, find like people there. I guarantee you, you're not going to find a board game that doesn't have some sort of video tutorial or review or something, because it really is. The market is just expanding.
It's a culture. It's become a culture, and I think a lot of it, like D&D and tabletoping, has really blown up. I think a lot of people enjoy being like
around
in the
people.
Same room. Yeah. It's kind of how nerds like us socialize, mm-hmm. you know, face to face.
And unless you have just zero friends to play board games with, which I find that hard to believe, if you have a game shop near you, mm-hmm. you'll have future friends that will want to play board games with you.
Yep.
But the point is, if you have friends, there exists a board game for you and your group of friends. Not just a board game. There exists an entire genre of board games at this point mm-hmm. that you and your friends can play. They're out there.
And if you don't have any friends to play board games with, get yourself a haircut. Maybe see how you're living. Change some things. Just saying.
Be the best you can be.
Go out there, try harder.
Be the you Mr. Rogers knows you can be.
There you go. All right, we're going to end it on that, guys. Thanks for tuning in. Also, we mentioned it several times. Do hit us up on Patreon, patreon.com/podzilla1985. We have officially started posting pre-shows. If you pay a dollar, mm-hmm. 100 cents, $1, you get access to every pre-show that we do.
Yep.
I'm posting them. Shannon sending them to me to get posted. Mm-hmm. They're on there. We've
got
several.
They're a lot of fun too, because it's less like even like the Nerd Up ones. Like we're not necessarily only talking about what we're talking about that night. It's just general us kind of dicking around.
Yeah,
and forgetting
Ace
that
is talking about wrestling.
Maybe or maybe
sometimes.
Not. Sometimes he talks. Sometimes I have other interests. Like, did you guys know that Undertaker threw Mankind? Dang it.
So the pre-shows are not just us like, all right, go ahead and talk to the mic. Now talking to the mic, that happens.
Right.
But it's a whole lot of, like, usually when I test sound, I test it by having conversations at the table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they are frequently funny. They are always uncensored.
I think we're funny.
They're very uncensored.
And yeah, no.
Like I said, we forget we're recording sometimes.
Frequently, one would say. There are audio clips that exist somewhere that people on this network would very much like to be deleted.
None of us can run for government.
No. Well, no, we can. We absolutely can.
Yeah, let's be honest. What's the standard right now? I got this stuff.
Yeah.
I ain't even got a Twitter account. Let's do this.
So, hit us up on that Patreon. It's a dollar. Gets you that pre-show, and it's funny. Also, find us on Facebook, facebook.com/podzilla1985. Hit us up on Facebook. If there's a board game that you think it is a crime we didn't mention, post it on Facebook. Yeah. And we will apologize and mention it next time, maybe.
Tell you why it's bad.
Or let us know if you like tried one of these games and hated it or loved it.
That would also be really cool. Give us the review. Mm-hmm. Like, you on your recommendation, we tried this and it was awesome. Or, I hate you guys because this ruined my family.
Or just come in and say hi, because we see the numbers of who's listening. Who are you people?
Say something. We're lonely.
I miss you.
So
I want
lonely.
To know you.
Hashtag be like Zane.
Be like Zane.
I want to know what love is.